From Studio 22, you're listening to ServCast with your host, William Lamb. ServCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Welcome to ServCast. We're glad you're with us today. This is going to be a great show. And one of our guests is Clark Beckham. Now, you may know Clark Beckham. Clark Beckham was the runner-up in 2015 with American Idol. But I guess the real claim to fame today, Clark, is you're my friend, right?
That's right. That's what I tell everybody when they ask me.
It's true, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely a true statement.
Now, a little known fact that people that are listening to us today would not know unless we tell them, so we'll just go ahead and tell them, is that you and I have spent some time writing a song together. Is that right?
Sure, you could say that. I think I was playing guitar in the middle of Honduras and you were singing something. So yeah, I think
It never got printed, never was published. It was never on a, maybe, is it going to be one of your new releases? Or are you going to release
you
that
know,
down the road?
I think maybe if you can send me a demo of it, if you can just handle that. I mean, people have done less and got credit for writing things.
Oh, that's
so
great.
You know,
yeah.
You could totally say that.
Now, what Clark knows that you guys don't know is there is no demo because I actually wrote it off the cuff, and so I don't have anything to remember from. But
just write something else off the cuff and send it to me.
We might do that on this podcast today. I don't know, right?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clark, welcome back to Lee, man. You were recently with us at a chapel. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, we in there get to talk about Jesus and reflect on what's happened in your world. So So since 2015, where are you at now? What's going on? Let's talk a little bit about where Clark is today.
Since 2015, since Idol, I was independent for 2 years, independent artist. I still am technically. But for 2 years, I was all 100% independent, no management, no label, no nothing. And I had a couple opportunities, but they didn't seem right. Recently, I just got connected to management, which is really great. And they've been doing an incredible job. Been basically just writing songs and recording them, you know, out of my own pocket. The struggle was really making music and recording music to a high optimum level with below optimum budget flexibility. So I wasn't going to rush through things. I wasn't going to make something that was okay. So I waited until I was able to have the funds to record stuff. And so now finally, 2 years later, This is how long it's taken. I'm releasing music next month in October.
October 6th, I think you said today.
October 6th is going to be the first single. It's called I Need. That's going to be releasing. I did that with Steve Jordan and Pino Palladino, which is John Mayer's drummer and bass player and producer. So that's what's on the horizon.
So let's talk about your faith. You're unashamed in your faith, man. Unapologetic,
absolutely.
You know, honestly. And I've seen you in many circles. So how did you come to faith in Jesus? And maybe talk a little bit about that history, and then we'll talk a little bit about what does it look like to be involved in faith in an environment where not necessarily everyone around you espouses that same belief?
Sure. I came to faith. I grew up in church, kind of like most. I guess it's a similar story as most kids and growing up in the Bible Belt. But I mean, I grew up in church. My dad played and sang in the choir and taught Sunday school. And my mom sang in the choir and sang solos, and everything was great. I always felt like there was something missing, though. Every time in children's church, the preacher would say, if you're not sure where you'd go today, if you died, if you would go to heaven or hell, if you're not sure, let's say that prayer and let's come up front. I would come up front every Sunday for a year.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, a pastor would sit me down and be like, hey, you're good. You know, you came here last week But I would always go because I just felt like there was something I was missing. I felt like it's not just be nice to people, don't do like big loud sins and smile and go to church. Like that can't be it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were saying, you know, hey, you're good. You don't need to come down every time. So eventually I was like, okay, I guess this is it. I guess it's just that's what the Christian faith is. Like just be good and be nice and go to church and you're okay. Don't kill anybody or do something crazy and you're fine. Mm-hmm. Get married, have kids, whatever. And then I, when I was 18, actually when I was about 16 or 17, I realized that kid came back in me, and I realized that the only reason I was a Christian was because my parents told me to be, because that was the culture I grew up in. And I said, that is no basis of faith. That is no basis of reality. And if I was, if I grew up in Saudi Arabia or Egypt, I would be a Muslim. And if I grew up in a Jewish family, I'd be a, you know, would practice Judaism. So I realized that, and I actually lost the faith and was a, what I call a closeted atheist for not long, maybe 8 months or so, maybe a year.
This was prior to Lee, or was this while you were at Lee?
This was when I was in high school.
Okay.
And I continued to lead worship as a
closeted atheist. Wow.
And the really the troubling thing is I was still really good at it, you know, not really believing. And I believed that this was just something that we'd made up, something that we'd made up to make us feel better and to fit our Western culture values. And that was it. That was all this was, to make us feel like we're not alone. And we, and my understanding was we really were. God came to me and became real to me when I started to pursue truth. Apart from my parents' faith, apart from the culture I was around, he became real to me, and I found him slowly, and he revealed himself to me, and I've met him. I met God, and it was a, I remember a church service where he was so real to me. It was a camp, actually, church camp, my senior year, and he just smacked me in the face with the Holy Spirit, and I just, ever since, and then some things went down. My parents divorced, like, the day I got back from that camp, my parents split up, and I remember praying to God. I was like, I need you to be, you said you're the all, my all in all, you're everything in every way. I need you to be the warmth of a mother and the safety feeling that a child has when the father's in the household, and I need that, and I don't have that. And there wasn't any music playing. There wasn't any preacher around saying stuff. I was in my room by myself, sitting on the corner of my bed, looking up to the ceiling. I remember exactly where I was, what I was looking at. And I'm telling you, I felt the Holy Spirit, what I now know is the Holy Spirit, come into the room, wrap his arms around me, and I felt physically warm. And I had this peace that made no sense. It passed all understanding, and I felt that peace and described it that way before I even knew about that verse, that it made no sense. And since then, it was so real to me, and it had nothing to do with my parents, had nothing to do with my upbringing. I had touched God. And I became obsessed with whatever that was, like who touched me, who was that that held me, who, what was that? And I've since went to Lee and really dove into that more with campus choir and different things I was involved here. And now that I've been introduced to that, the richness and goodness of God in a real way, not in a religious way, in a real genuine way by myself in my room, and I've experienced him since then and read his word, the Bible, and gained a relationship with him, a real relationship. When things are offered to me, when I'm out and the environment is not a Christian environment and things are offered to me like sex, drugs, rock and roll type of lifestyle, and that's around, and those things are offered to me, I'm like, man, social status, money, drugs, alcohol, females, like, my heart's full already. My heart's full already. I've tasted and seen the goodness of God. Why would I want a counterfeit? I've tasted the real thing so deeply. Now, that doesn't mean I'm perfect. It doesn't mean I'm not tempted, and I don't want to paint that narrative that some of us accidentally paint, that therefore we're not tempted anymore and we're perfect and we don't mess up. But it's different. It's not a, it's something real to me. And as far as when you asked what about when you're around people that aren't Christians and how do you navigate those waters, it's actually very easy. When people just want you to be real, and people don't like Christians typically because, or people that call themselves Christians because they feel like they're very fake, very judgmental, and they just see what's on the news because they don't go to church. They just see what's on the news and picket signs and saying evil things and just hateful, judgmental things. So when you're just real and it's a legitimate thing for you, and it is for me, you're not like smacking people in the head with Bibles or judging them or cursing them, but you're treating them with love and respect and you're just being real. People love that, and they actually are drawn to it. So that's, you know, that's been my experience with it.
Let's go back just a minute to a statement you made earlier. You said that, you know, this transition from this eight months of, you know, being a closet atheist of sorts, then you came to a real personal relationship. What are some steps that you took to get to the place in your room where you were able to actually hear and experience and know that that was God, that that was not something that you had been taught in an abstract way, but this was a personal encounter? What are steps that people can take to get to the place where they can actually genuinely, authentically hear God?
For me, when I hear God the most, and certainly in that moment, is when I was at what people call rock bottom. And rock bottom can mean different things for different people, but it just means when you have nothing else to go to but God. There's nothing else to lean to but Him. And at that moment, I had nothing. I couldn't go to my parents. My parents are who I went with for my whole life. That's who the kids go to. You don't go to your mom. You don't go to your dad. You go to your parents. You have a scary dream. You go to your parents' room.
Right.
And you sleep in between your parents. And I didn't have anything. I had nobody. So really, when we come to a point, and you don't necessarily have to get to rock bottom to realize that God is the only one who you can go to. You know, in anything, in when everything's great, when you're on a mountaintop, having the understanding that God is all you need, God is it. He's your all in all, feeling everything in every way. When you come to that understanding, whether it's at the bottom when you have nothing else to look to, or when you're at the top and you remember what got you there and you focus on God and not all the other things that you could go to. But that's just, I would say, humility and just putting God in his place, which is at the top, King. When you put that and give yourself to Him fully, that's when He's able to move, and He promises to move and speak. And I knew it was God, and I knew it wasn't something I was taught, because I didn't believe what I was taught. And God spoke, and I physically felt warm, and He didn't need to do that. He didn't need to literally physically. He knew what I meant. He knew I was saying a metaphor. He knew that I wasn't literally, but He didn't need to do that, but He did. Felt physically warm. It was so real that there's no way. There's nothing I was taught. It wasn't a cultural thing. It wasn't anything like that. First of all, because I didn't believe in what I was taught. That's how I know.
So Christian disciplines can be developed and you know, learned and developed and modeled, but that Christian experience really is an encounter. It's something more than just a story out of a book. This is a real personal live encounter.
I think so. Yeah.
What are some ways that you have encountered God in the midst of some of the most darkest places that you mentioned recently in a talk? You know, what are some of those dark places, not necessarily to identify those, but what are ways in which light and goodness and God can be visible in the midst of what apparently seems to be darkness and chaos?
Yeah, and you hear this a lot, but it's so true. That's really God's wheelhouse. Like, that's His environment. There's a verse in Psalms that says, even the darkness is like light to God. He can see through all of it. You're never, you know, God's hand is not too short. He can reach everyone. He can reach you no matter where you are and what darkness. And it's in the dark places that sometimes, you know, and also in Scripture it says, you know, when you face trials, count it as joy, because just facing trials brings perseverance, and perseverance brings a number of things. But as difficult as it is, sometimes you have to go through hard tests and hard things. And when Jesus Himself, right before He went into ministry, right after He's baptized, as you know, He went into 40 days of fasting, and the devil tempted Him, and it was probably not a great time. But sometimes those are necessary. But when I've been in the darkest times in my life, God has been there, and it's a lot of times. Sometimes it's right there in my face, and it's like, wow, and I have this amazing moment. And sometimes it's in hindsight, just looking back, like, wow, God really did speak, and He was so clear to me. And I do feel like that's God's wheelhouse. It's like when everything else has just gone away, He's steady. He stays.
So, how do you use your platform to actually reflect God to this world? Now, I mean, you know, you're singing both Christian venues, right, and somewhat what some people would term often as the secular secular side. Are you pursuing one of those over the other currently, and how are you going to continue to use your platforms to reflect God's love to this world?
Yeah, so I mainly sing in secular venues and like secular music, pop side of things, pop, soul, R&B type stuff. And I remember when I gave my life to God for real at that camp, I was going to audition for American Idol. I was 18. I was going to audition that season because they were coming to Nashville. I was going to do it. And God told me no. Clearly, he said no. He gave me the scripture of always get mixed up, but it means the same thing. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Mm-hmm. Or if it's where your heart is, your treasure will be. And I knew what my heart was, and God's told me your heart's not in the right place. I knew my heart wasn't the right place. So a lot of times God will speak to us, and then we'll tell him what he meant. You know.
Oh, wow.
So I heard that, and I was like, okay, that means no secular music. I have to lead worship. That's what I have to do. And you kind of hear that in church, like that's kind of a common narrative that if you're musically talented and you give your life to God, that means you become a worship leader, period. Mm-hmm. Everything else is heathen. Mm-hmm. Everything else is worldly, and you give your life to God and become a worship leader and lead people into the presence of God. So I stripped down every dream, every desire that I had to be a secular artist, to sing on American Idol and to sing at venues and things like that that I had dreamed of. Stripped all of them down, and finally I was like, okay, God, okay. I'll be a worship leader. Like, what greater satisfaction is there than doing that and leading people into your presence? And okay, I'll be a worship leader. And God so clearly said no. I was like, no. Mm-hmm. Did you not hear what I said, God? I just said I'll be a worship leader. What are you talking about? No. Mm-hmm. I just said, that's like what everybody says. Like, give your life to God. And they could have done secular stuff, but they said, no, I love Jesus instead. And they become a worship leader. What are you talking about? No. And God showed me, revealed to me that my calling is to go out into a secular world and sing a pop music, popular music, to sing and to write songs about this world that I see through redeemed eyes. Because people write about the world, and they write about the world that they see through fallen eyes, and we all do, I mean, if you really think about it, but when you listen to pop or you listen to certain styles of music that's not Christian, Christian contemporary gospel music, a lot of times they're promoting destructive lifestyles. They're mm-hmm. promoting sex outside of marriage, promoting drugs, promoting sleeping around, promoting things like that. And it is destructive, and it's a cultural power that takes us in. And so my calling is to just write songs about the world, about love, about heartbreak, about everything that everyone's writing on, except through redeemed eyes, and write about God's world and God's purpose, and really just be that light in that industry and in that mission field. Really, that's how I feel. That's what God's called me to do.
Let's talk about that light for just a minute, because you know you're obviously living under a huge spotlight, and in doing so, you know people are always looking at you. So, what steps do you take now to maintain your integrity? You said a few minutes ago that, you know, when darkness is prevailing, that your faith increases and God's there, you know, kind of sort of my paraphrase of what you were talking about. But at this stage, you know, what are some stop gaps you have in place? What are some areas, some ways that you have in place to maintain your integrity while writing good songs in the same pop culture, you know, creating good lyrics that would, again, let people see the world through, you know, redeemed eyes. You know, every song doesn't have to have God in it to have meaning, right?
Sure, absolutely. You know?
But yet, you don't steer away from that. But at this stage, you know, you're writing some stuff that would be still reflecting God's love. How do you maintain your integrity? How do you... It's got to be something more, Clark, than just saying, okay, so I'm not going to go out and party. Okay, I'm not going to let this... You know, I'm not going to go into this hotel room that I don't need to be in. I'm not going to get involved in this activity that I don't need to be involved in. How do you prevent that? How do you, you know, what is that relationship drive inside of you and the action steps that put you to the place to be able to say, hey, I'm going to maintain my integrity because that's a greater spotlight on God than any lyrics I could ever write.
Right. Well, practically, I make sure I surround myself with great Christian band members mm-hmm. that are brothers and are close and agree with me in that. That's a big thing for me. It's something I make sure to get good guys around me. Also practical ways. I make sure that I'm never in a room alone with a girl. When I'm on tour and when I'm traveling around with someone I don't know closely, it doesn't happen. I make mm-hmm. sure, like my band members, like I'll tell my bass player, be like, "Hey man, just keep an eye on me. Make sure I don't go anywhere." Because mm-hmm. again, I'm not perfect. Paul talks about it himself. Paul wrote most of the New Testament. He's a stud, and he said himself that he finds himself doing things that he doesn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And the things that he doesn't want to do are the things that he finds himself doing sometimes. Who will save this wretched soul that I am? So a lot of times I think we paint this picture that we're perfect and we're not tempted and we're good and we know what's wrong so we don't do what's wrong and that's it. That's just not accurate. We have to be, like you said, we have to take steps. We can't mm-hmm. just be like, "Oh, I'm just not going to." You know, so it's a lot of people can fall into arrogance and actually fall into the sin that they've despised. So I will always, my band members know, like, make sure I'm always with them at all times. I got eyes on me and I got eyes on them. We keep ourselves responsible and keep ourselves smart. And a lot of it really though is just, if I didn't have God fulfilling me, I would run to that stuff. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have God fulfilling the provision in me, I would be doing everything I can to make more money. If I didn't have God fulfilling the relationship in me, I would be running to any girl who would give me that satisfaction of relationship and intimacy. If I didn't have God fulfilling those things, I would be running to please people. But because I have him fulfilling and I take steps like surrounding myself with good Christian brothers mm-hmm. and sisters, like those are the things that keep me afloat.
Recently you talked about quiet places, and so how do you find quiet places when you're rarely alone, and how do you find those intimate moments with God where you are recharged and refueled so that you're not operating in your fleshly energy, which will be expended usually very quickly and mm-hmm. dangerously? You know, mm-hmm. how do you refill, and what are some quiet moments that you can find when you're not alone?
You know, honestly, when you're an artist, especially a solo artist, like I am independently doing a lot of stuff I'm doing, you actually do find a lot of alone time. A lot. I was at home for like a week with not much to do. And I don't have a lot of friends still, like in high school or in White House and stuff. So like I was at home and I just had tons of alone time. And a lot of times plane rides are great. Mm-hmm. You know, from Nashville to LA is like four and a half hours. So that's an easy time to read and really dive into stuff like that. Before shows, everyone always gives you time. Like, because every artist usually wants like 20, 30 minutes just to focus and stuff. Actually, I do find a lot of alone time, much more now than mm-hmm. I did when I was just a student at Lee, mm-hmm. actually. So I actually do find a lot of time to do that, thankfully.
We'll be right back in just a minute with some closing thoughts from Clark. Now, Clark, I had the privilege of you traveling with our team to Honduras when you were a student at Lee University. So I've seen you in the gutter, mm-hmm. In the good gutter of sorts. Mm-hmm. You know, or I guess there's no good gutter. It was a bad gutter, but you were there for a good cause with sure. many of us. And we were sharing the love and light of Jesus Christ. And so I've seen you, the personal touch and the genuine care for people. What are some ways in which you're still serving other people while you're apparently on the stage, and you know, I mean, the spotlight's on you. People are coming to listen to you, and you know, be encouraged or whatever by your music. What are ways in which you're still reaching out with the servant heart that you know you need to?
Yeah, a lot of times, practical ways. Because really, what's so important about service, how that relates to your entire life, how you live your whole life, is just it. Knowing it's not about you, whether I'm performing to know that it's not about me. It's about the audience I'm taking care of right now. It's about them, and I'm serving them by singing for them and singing to them, and it's about them. Afterwards, when I'm really tired and I'm exhausted and I just like want to go like hotel and FaceTime my girlfriend or call my mom or just do nothing and watch a movie or something, and there's, you know, 100 people that are in line and want a selfie and are going to ask the same questions I've been asked 100 times. They're going to mess up the selfie. They're going to come back and say it was blurry, that I'm going to smile the same smile, say the same thing for an hour with those people. I take joy in doing that, because how easy is it for me to give them, you know, when I know for me, like when I find someone that I look up to, a celebrity of sorts or whatever, and I get to talk to them, it's a big deal, and I can't stop thinking about it for like a week. Mm-hmm. And I tell people about it, post about it. It's a big deal. So when I have the privilege to stay and talk to people and take selfies, not just take a picture and bounce, but like talk to them, find out their name, where they're from, what's going on, listen to the Holy Spirit, see if He's speaking to me to tell them something, or which has happened before, which is pretty impactful and pretty mm-hmm. great when that happens. Those are ways. And that way, to serve people, just to hang out and talk to people who want to talk to you at the end of shows and stuff. But also, my main goal, I'll be clear, money is a great line in a friend of mine's songs, John Bellion's his name, money is not the key to wealth. Mm-hmm. And money is not the end all, it's not the thing. But I'll be clear, my goal is to make millions and millions and millions of dollars so I can go back to villages like we went to in Honduras mm-hmm. and build a city on top of a village mm-hmm. that's made of scrap metal and wood and trash. That I don't need money. I've got everything I need right now. I have a car, I have a guitar, a piano, cable TV to watch Oklahoma football. That's all I need. I don't need anything else. I don't need anything else. I don't need money. I don't need a Mercedes. I don't need like Benz. I've got a truck that drives well and it's smooth and it's great. Like, that's all I need. And so that's a big, big goal for me, and has been at the beginning, is to go and not just be able to make a living and support a family, but to be at the top and make millions, billions of dollars so I can be a active hand of God mm-hmm. financially for people.
Mm-hmm. Man, there's a lot of proven theories out there and ideas about that. You know, that God does bless givers. And when you give it away, He has a way of getting it back to you to actually continue giving it away. One last question for you today, Clark. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for young, aspiring, or old aspiring? You know, those people that want to enter this type of lifestyle, they want to enter this music world, this music industry. What advice do you have for people?
I'd say you need two strong foundations. The second much more important than the first, but the first foundation you need is a musical foundation. And I get a little tired of when people say, I have this dream, I want to see my name in lights. And I'm like, awesome. Like, how long did you practice yesterday? Like, mm-hmm. well, I haven't played guitar in a couple of weeks. It's like, oh, okay. So you just like talking about a dream. Mm-hmm. So it's first foundation of being really good at music, straight up. Whether that's writing, whether that's some type of another asset of your artistry, be really good. Work so hard that you can't be ignored. And then the second foundation, second foundation would be a foundation in God. As corny as that sounds, it's totally legit. If I didn't have a foundation in God and went into this, I would not be here. Mm-hmm. And it would not be good for me. So those two things are, because when I was 18, I had the music foundation. I was really good when I was 18, and I could have done American Idol. Mm-hmm. But my foundation in God was not there. And He even told me that's what He was speaking to me. And I know that if I didn't come to Lee, if I didn't go through campus choir, if I didn't go through all those things and find my foundation in Him, it would have fallen through completely, spiritually and business-wise and stuff. So those are the two foundations that I would say focus on, the foundation in God and, of course, the foundation in your craft and your music.
Thank you for joining us today on Servcast. We're very glad you came, Clark, and we look forward to maybe writing a song with you again one day or something like that, right?
Of course. Absolutely.
And, you know, when you continue to make that millions and billions and give it all away, hey, man, like before, we got great places to do it.
I know.
Seriously, I really appreciate the genuineness today, taking a few minutes just to talk from your heart I think a lot of times when we see performers, it's so easy to, you know, just experience that from a distance and, you know, walk away and never really understand the value of that relationship piece. And so thank you for opening that book a little bit today and
absolutely
sharing with us about your struggles early on in your life and where you are today, because you know, as I say it often on Surfcast, we're made for more, and we all have something that we can contribute for good, and we really want God to continue to use us for that. So thank you, man.
Thanks for having me. Loved it.
All right.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.